Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 846th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today's Rosie on the House replay features Dawn Guerrera of Barrio Bread in Tucson, Arizona. Dawn is an amazing baker and doing incredible things in Southern Arizona. Enjoy.
Rosie, Rosie on the House, every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on around back Arizona, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the House. Your Saturday morning tradition since 1988. And if you're following along in your Rosie on the House homeowner handbook, you know this Saturday, for Saturday of the month, it's the Urban Farming Hour. Farmer Greg is joining us. In the book, it said seeds and savings, but Farmer Greg's got a special guest, and it's going to change it a little bit to more grains and seeds. And, man, I'm excited to hear this hour. I don't know if I'm going to make it through without you hearing my stomach start to grumble, because I love me some bread.
Well, and I heard a rumor that there's some bread in the house.
Well, oh, I know where I'm going prepared. This next break.
Well, I'm really, really excited. We have Dawn Guerrera from Barrio Bread with us today, and he has done a lot of work in the ancient and local grains arena for the Southwest. And Dawn is a James Beard Award-winning baker and founder of Barrio Bread. First an anthropologist, then an educator, then a baker, Dawn started his community-supported bakery in his garage in Tucson in 2009 and sold his naturally fermented artisan loaves from the back of his car, get this, at a local elementary school and farmer's market and via word of mouth. As the popularity of his breads outgrew his home bakery, he opened his first store. By sharing his community-supported approach, Dawn demonstrates a model that other bakers can carry forward. To Dawn, Barrio Bread isn't just a business, it is the bakery of the future. Welcome, Dawn. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited about today.
And you'll have to excuse me because I did not know what the James Beard Award was, so I was sitting over here looking it up while... And this is something specifically for... chefs and restaurants. It's
correct.
Pretty,
and it's really big deal.
Oscars of food.
Oscars of food. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
I may not make it till break before I go grab a slice.
Yeah, there you go. Dawn and I caught up yesterday and got to know each other a little bit. And one of the curious things that he shared with me was that he was on a walk when he was living in Flagstaff. And he ran into somebody. So part of this kind of happened magically, didn't it, Dawn?
It did, for sure. I had just finished studies at the U, moved up to Flagstaff for the summer months, a little bit cooler in my van, and just out for a stroll up on the mountain and met someone, got turned around on which way to go next and started a conversation, learned this person worked at a bakery and asked me what I was doing in town. I told him, just moved in. And I was looking for work and if he knew anything. And he mentioned he was a baker and that little bakery downtown, Sundance Bakery, was looking for a baker. So it was perfect. I thought, this is what I love to do. I've always been a carb kid, love bread, love being around my nana making tortillas and my mom making bread. So it's something I grew up with. But that first day in the bakery, I found myself at home. I found myself doing exactly what I thought I should be doing. I just fell in love that first night. It's a lot of physical work. You're creating something with your hands, and that's something I've always enjoyed. As a kid, I've always been an entrepreneur. My dad was a barber. I grew up in his barber shop, shining shoes, and he taught me some solid entrepreneurial skills. And I felt if I just had my own thing, I would just follow my dad. What I really admired my dad owned his own business, and I thought that night in the bakery, I just need to put in the work now and get after it and learn as much as I could, and dream come true. That's what I'm doing now, and I just love every day.
And as we discover your story here, there's a really cool piece. Basically, what you're doing is you're applying cultural anthropology to food. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, correct. I've studied food systems, and when I was at the university, really fascinated with the regions, Sonora regions of Mexico, and just culinary traditions that have been developed there and changed, and just a lot of influence in that region here with the U.S. and that border and how it straddled us. But it's really been interesting to get back into the grains that were once grown in that Sonoran desert where my family lived in Sonoran, Mexico, Magdalena. For me, it's a chance to be someone in the family that picks up this grain and goes with it and starts to feed my own community the way my ancestors did. Some of the same seeds, one of the seeds that I'm using now, really what started the grain movement in Southwest and in specifically in Tucson, is that Sonoran wheat brought by the missionaries, followed along that Santa Cruz River Valley, and go back to the past and bring it into the future now. And it's really a magical time for grain. And I think the popularity of making products with local grain has just boomed in the last decade. And I started 13, 14 years ago with just the idea and USDA grant work, and it was funded and allowed us to pursue it. But it's just an awesome work for me to tie in the anthropology, the education, which is my other degree, and bread making, which I've always been passionate about, and definitely feed in my community. This is big for me growing up in a Latino and Irish family. When you go over someone's house, the tables are big. Everyone's invited. It's not just family, but it's neighbors. It's you're not gonna go hungry, that's for sure, and lots of entertainment in between. So I love being that person and celebrating my cultural heritage.
And I'm sure you know this. You mentioned the Santa Cruz River, but the oldest known farming site in America is the Santa Cruz River.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's the oldest known archaeological site that they can prove farming. It goes like 10,000 years, and it's the oldest in the whole United States.
Yeah, that's actually was helpful in that designation of city gastronomy. So that's one of the things that were done, is the carbon dating of some of the corn in that area to show that evidence is longest standing agricultural history in North America.
That's so
cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and most people probably know about corn in the desert, but I don't think a lot of people actually get the magnitude of grains, ancient grains that are being grown in the desert Southwest.
Arizona, and specifically Southern Arizona, is a premier grain growing region. Father Kino proved this. It's a perfect growth cycle. Plant it in the winter. You get a couple frosts to germinate that seed. Things grow. You get some of the wet season. But getting towards summer, you have a natural drying of the grain. So a lot of farmers not needing those pesticides to subdue the weeds that usually start to pop up with some early summer rain. But instead, it's the drying out. Mother Nature takes care of that process. You see the grain dry. Beautiful amber fields, and it's just a natural cycle. Everything needs to come out before monsoon. Of course, we know that grain should not get wet right before harvest because that creates a sprout. But this region in particular is premier, and it's proven itself not only back then, but now with a lot of Italian pasta is made with the Arizona durum. We sell it. It comes back to us in pasta. So really my ideas, and I talked to my farmers long ago, through the USDA grant work, is recruiting farmers and talking to them about the benefits of keeping that grow local. Speaking with the Wong family, BKW Farms, fourth generation Chinese farmers in Marana, about how awesome it would be to feed our community, to take that grow that I asked for it and bring it right down into Tucson and feed the people with some tasty bread. And it started with that first Sonoran wheat as a model to other grain varietals to be planted and grown and harvested and milled up and made into bread, and in some cases made into some whiskey, some two-row barley, and beer even. I made several beers with Brewers of Arizona right here in Phoenix with Wilderness Brewing. We made a kvass with some ancient grain wheat, and that's a Russian-style beverage that's low ABV, but we're proving it. The grain economy is live and well, and it's not just me making bread, but a lot of other producers.
I wasn't going to call you on that when you said it earlier, when you said Latino-Irish mix, and there's always tortillas. I'm like, you only said half of that heritage side.
Right. No, that's a wild party, let's say that. At the end of the night, is anything. It's a good time.
There you go.
Yeah.
And one of the really cool things that happened along the way was that you were the first test baker for Sonoran white wheat. And I was listening on the periphery as Sonoran white wheat in 2010, 2011 was being grown out and watching in amazement. And you were one of the lucky people to actually be able to make bread from it.
That time was very exciting. I mean, with the grant work, the grant was written, it was filed, it was approved and funded, and the first grow started. So that grow was 4 acres of test. Gary Nabhan was one of the first to bring it. He's an ethnobotanist, one of the first to bring it to my garage. And he and I go way back, even to Flagstaff days. He brought the pillowcase sack of white Sonoran wheat berries to my garage. And I had this really rudimentary mill. It was a wonder mill, more of a hammer mill, but milled the flour, let it rest overnight. Next day I made the dough, and it just smelled so different from anything I worked with before.
And that was one of the curious things for me when we chatted yesterday. You said the aroma was strikingly different.
Yeah, not just the flour itself. We use a lot of this commoditized flour. It has just no smell, no aroma to it. But this was different. Fresh milled flour like I have never smelled before. And that first loaf of bread out of the oven dropped to my knees because it just smelled so intense in my bakery like it had never smelled before. And I knew I was onto them right then. It was 10 years flashing in front of me that things were going to be different in my community. I'd be making bread with local grains to create an opportunity for me, of course, but also for my community to just relive some of this past with the Sonoran wheat products that would be made.
We'll continue this conversation. We can do a lot, but we can't stop the clock. Be right back. Continuing our conversation with Farmer Greg in the Urban Farm Hour, a little bit of shift on the topic, bringing it into local grains, because we've got baker Don Guerrera from Barrio Bread in studio. You've got a location in Tucson, and I understand you've got a new one in Gilbert.
New business in Gilbert. I'm proud to say I'm inside the flour mill now, and I will never run out of flour. One reason, the choice I did that. But no, an amazing time to work with my good buddy Jeff Zimmerman and his daughter Emma, the owners of Hayden Flour Mills. Just salt to the earth people, amazing. And yeah, just proud to be working in that same building with them and turn that grain into some amazing bread. So really like a grain house right there, and it's all happening.
There's something about freshly milled flour made into bread that just makes it more extraordinary.
It definitely does. It's all the smells, it's the good feelings, and it's part of the economy from agricultural to gastronomy. It's just everything in one. It's art, it's science, and it just rocks me every day. I got up at 1:45 this morning, but I might wake up a little sleepy, but putting on my baker shoes and walking out the door, I am jazzed to get into the bakery and make some amazing bread. I'm wide awake by the time I get there, and maybe a cup of coffee or two, but I'm ready to roll. No pun intended. But,
nice. But, my gosh, what have you got there, Romy?
I went to go try a slice just thinking, okay, he brought a slice. I mean, he's got two bags, and this one, he's got Saguaro cactus on it. This one's got, I'm assuming, the Durum. Is that the Sonoran wheat?
This is a Tibetan purple barley loaf. Right,
okay.
There. Yeah. But yeah, the Heritage is my signature loaf with the Arizona background and then the Saguaro. Tibetan purple barley, which is an amazing grain.
We've got
einkorn, which is dating back 9,000 years old for that domestication and preparation of that grain. That's my love right there. Timeless as a baker when you work with these old grains. Oh, yeah.
I'm just
date walnut.
Some previews showing off.
Yeah, date walnut made with the Agritopia Farms dates that they just harvested. So
working
nice. With other producers, growers, to make sure that we're using up the food and everyone's eating well.
And what is this one here?
This is called that's the seeded baguette. So sunflower, sesame, poppy seeds, and pumpkin seeds crusted on a baguette. Yeah,
you don't have any fun at your bakery, I don't take
no,
it.
I have 42 different breads in my collection right now. Just keep.
Is that all?
They just keep coming. More new grains and new breads and bread for everyone. I would definitely say that. People ask me what's my top seller. I say they all sell about the same because just like people, we're all different. We all different tastes. And so that's the fun part. You can always match someone up with the bread that ask them a couple preferences and you can steer them right to that loaf they're going to love.
And as I was playing with your bread, you had mentioned Agritopia, that Agritopia out of Gilbert. So that community was built on the concept of trying to be able to feed itself.
Yeah. A beautiful community, right? I met Christy, one of the farm directors, at a presentation. It was a conference, and I was given a keynote speech at the local Arizona Food Forum, and she caught me right after my talk and said, I need to talk to you sometime today. And I said, let's meet at the expo. I had a booth set up, and we just put it together quickly. She said, I need this bread. I need it for my community, and when can we do this? So a couple chats and a little bit of logistics, and I'm making the bread, taking it out there, and it's working so well.
And they do such a great job of their community farm out there does a really, really good job, and they've got dates and citrus and fruit trees out there, and I think 11 acres of farmland that they're still farming.
Yeah, it's incredible. They have an amazing CSA. I think they just got voted top CSA in the valley, community supported agriculture. So they're putting together these fantastic boxes of their local grow, not to mention all the restaurants and shopping out there. You can just hang out, even a place to get beers, pizza, barbecue. You got it all out there. Ice cream even, right?
Yeah. We should have them on the show here one of these days.
That would be fun.
I think you should.
Cool, cool, cool. So we're talking a lot about heritage grains here. And I want to just touch on the different varieties, because there's not just one or two varieties. There's lots of them. Tell us about a little bit about some of them.
Yeah, I'm working with about 12 species right now. And that's the grow from south of Tucson all the way up to the Verde Valley. A lot of the grain's coming out of Coolidge right now, which I'm super excited, working with Noah Hiscox, Hiscox Farms. But I work with Noah quite a bit, and also BKW Farms and Marana. And then once in a while, I dabble out in some other farms, whoever's interested in trying to get some of that grow. I've worked with the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe, the Tonaltam, the San Javier Co-op Farm. But yeah, this is my interest, my passion work, is not trying to just stay with one, but trying to involve the whole community of farmers and give everyone an opportunity and learn from new people and support their economics of their farming. And at the end, just to showcase something just so cool with the Instagram now and social media, snapping a couple of photos with the Pascua-Yaqui tribe, some representatives from there with the breads, with the flour they brought. It's impactful, right? We should be paying attention to who's growing our food, especially the indigenous farmers that have been here for years with their farming practices. Let's shine a light on them. I'm able to do this only because of these farmers.
Don Guerrero, Barrio Bread, joining us in the Urban Farming Hour with Farmer Greg. More after bottom of the hour news. If you're just joining us after bottom of the hour news, it's the Urban Farm Hour here at the fourth Saturday of the month and the Outdoor Living Hour of Rosie on the House. Our topic has changed slightly from what's in our homeowner handbook because we're talking grains. We've got joining Farmer Greg, his guest Don Guerrero of Barrio Bread. And Don, the loaves were so beautiful, I had to come back and show them off before I could bring myself to cutting into them. But this one, it's got, is that walnuts I'm tasting?
Yeah, the
in it?
Dayton walnuts. Yeah.
So what, yeah, explain that one, because this is.
Yeah, this bread is the fruit component, the dates from Agritopia Farms here in Gilbert. So one of the things I love to do is try to recruit as much of the local goods that we have here, the local fruits and nuts or any of the herbs or even peppers that grow local and get them into the bread. I'd love to do those collaborations, but this one is a date walnut. Sourdough method is the Levant technique is the foundation of all my breads, and that's using wild yeast cultures that are wild yeast and bacterial cultures live in the flour and water medium that makes up the sourdoughs, but those leaven the bread. So long fermentations are required because it's a little bit slower moving, 24 hours start to finish to develop this bread. Some part of that time period is in ambient zone, which favors the yeast cell development, and then you get it into a cool zone, 40 to 55 degrees to favor more of that bacterial fermentation. But when you do that, you have the yeast and the bacteria working in symbiosis, so it's a full breakdown of gluten and the reduces the glycemic index of the bread through the reduction in starches. So a healthy bread, something that feels light on your body, it doesn't spike your blood sugar, and it doesn't give you the inflammation. Not only that, using older varieties of grain that are naturally low in gluten because they've been hybridized less. Like modern wheats, they go through a lot of different chromosomal change, but these are more pure in form, so makes the body feel good. I can say bread is good for you. This bread is good for you. No sugars, maybe a little olive oil and some focaccia, but hey, that's good for you.
And so how's it making you feel to eat it, Romy?
Oh, it's delicious. I love it. And my wife, she doesn't do a lot like the nuts and the dates and everything. I'm going to have to show her this to give her some ideas because she does the fermenting with the sourdough. And once we've started doing that, it's been about a year. We both can say we'll eat bread and not feel bloated.
Yeah. It's ancient bread making. That's the coolest thing is it's not much has changed in bread in the last 1,000 years or so, but we've just mucked it up, right? We've just changed it. We're trying to speed it up with a lot of commercial yeast and warm temperatures. And because of that, your body pays a little price and you don't get that nice texture. When you properly ferment the bread, you get that crust that develops on the outside. You get the nice moist interiors and a little hint of that sourdough, light sourdough. That sourdough is just the flavor is outcome of the process of the leavening, but it should be pretty young and vibrant and have that delicious taste.
Nice. Gotta love it.
You had a talking point in here on the three pillars of a community-supported bakery. I thought would be fun to make sure we covered those.
And I want to go someplace first, and that is, what is a community-supported bakery?
Yeah, a community-supported bakery to me is something I just put together from my background, and it makes sense to me. So when I had a chance to work with local grains, I wanted a bakery model that was ordinary, the model that we've seen, which is making a product, selling to the community, dollar for the dough. Instead, it takes a lot of education. When you have these pursuits, local grain economy movements or local food movements, you really need to talk about it. You really need to educate people. Why is it important to create biodiversity of seed and grain? It's important environmentally to just make sure this creates sustainability to if there's any sort of change in the world or in the climate. We have some best selected seeds that are growing well, but that also creates variety for me as a baker. I have these different seeds, all different pigments. And this is the beauty of these wheat berries. They all have different pigments. And that is how I create these beautiful colors for the breads. It's the Sonoran Desert. They all look a little bit different. So I needed to talk about this with my community, why I'm doing this. This is artisan bread. Artisan not meaning a style, does not mean crusty. It means the person producing it. Thinking about my educational background, how I'm going to put a model together, I can convince my community why it's important that we're growing local grains and making food with it. Sure, it might be more expensive at the start, but when you get the economics going of efficiency and people in your grain cluster working together, you can bring that price down. And really, it's not that much more expensive right now than what's in the grocery store. This bread, or the bread I brought in is a 2-pound loaf. And when Gilbert, that sells for $12. In Tucson, it's a smaller loaf. It sells for a little bit less. But pound for pound, you're getting about the same price. It just comes down to how you spend your money and how much you investigate your food. So outreach education is a big part of my business. And also local grain economy development, working with farmers. And then the bread production, which is what I've done since I was 21 years old. I learned how to make French technique Levant-style bread from a French baker who just came to America, and learning those methods after making American-style bread and learning how to make crusty, beautiful bread that's mahogany in color and using some quality grain, this is what I should be doing with my time and my life. So these three pillars is something that is the backbone of my studies, my life, and I put it together in an educational format, which I think we need to be doing more and more of. People want to know who's producing their food or who's growing the ingredients in that food and then why it's important to eat it and support it. And I need my community. They're part of the circular economy model. Without them, I just have bread on the shelves. And without me, my farmers just have grains and in 2,000-pound totes in warehouses and nothing moves. But if everyone's communicating, participating, we have something that's going to live into the future. this idea right now, the community-supported bakery, it's seen the world over. I've been to Taiwan to teach it a couple rounds, Mexico. I've been to Poland and Krakow and Warsaw to teach it. But this is what we're doing is getting a bakery. There's no bakery too small or too big. If you're doing work for your community and with those three pillars, you can engage a community and have something that's sustainable. And everyone eats. Everyone's informed, and this is where our world is going, and at least the people I want to be with, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And one of the things that you've done significantly, and you got a couple of grants for this, is you've engaged the farmers. So you actually went out and encouraged these farmers to start growing this stuff. Tell us about that process.
It was around 2011 when that grant was funded. We held some sessions at Native Seed Search. We asked farmers, Arizona farmers, if they'd be interested to come to our learning sessions. And there was some seed donation that was given, 2,000 pounds for a farmer to grow it and then pay back that seed and continue with the yield to go forward. But more and more, I'm meeting farmers that are interested, and this is incredible that we have sometimes younger farmers that are asking me about this. And it's nice that we have people interested, younger people interested in the farming. But yeah, it's going well. It seems to be no shortage. Now I'm sourcing about 350,000 pounds of local grain for my two sites. Yep. And with my grain company, Barrio Grains, now I can put it into packages, into mixes appropriate for certain products, and get out and teach it, whether it be through breadlessons.com, my online teaching or in-person teaching. I get into the schools. I went on the Pascua Yaqui tribe, working with them at the Boys and Girls Club, taught pizza to some young folks this past summer, and I do that every summer. But Tucson Village Farm in Tucson, it's an urban farm with educational farm. But yeah, just getting out and teaching it. If I can teach a young one 5 years old to make his or her own pizza dough and fire up a pizza on Friday night for the fam, I beat Domino's. This is good stuff. Before they start picking up the phone and ordering something, they know how to make it and they know where the grain comes from. Hey, and you're feeding your family, which is amazing, right? So with your own hands and know-how. And so this is what it takes, getting out there and teaching it. So this thing, this movement can live with or without me, and that's my hopes, my legacy to when I'm gone, to look down and see this happening in my own region of the world and beyond, and communities, my local, national, and my global community are doing it and inspired from it. So I love to share, and I love to get inspired from other people. Just being here today, this is my inspiration to take this and just get super pumped and excited and jazzed to get back to doing what I do best, is talking about it, doing it, and sharing it. And with open inspiring. Hands, open hands, knowledge should be shared.
Yeah, and inspiring people.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. You're awful quiet over there. I see you chewing on bread there, Romy.
I'm eating. I'm eating and listening.
Nice.
Well, so you had mentioned packaging. Is this available that we could order? You talked about how what a difference fresh ground flour is. Can I order 2 pounds of fresh ground flour online from you?
I'm getting close to the shipping of this grain, but you can buy it either in my bakeries.
Which are
Barrio,
located?
18 South Eastbourne in Tucson, Arizona. It's a Broadway Village shopping center. And here in Gilbert, it's Guadalupe and Colorado, which is close to Country Club inside Hayden Flour Mills. You can also get amazing grain where I am, right here in Gilbert with Hayden Flour Mills. I do some collab flour blends with them. But people should, holidays are coming up. You're going to be making your own products, and nothing better to make your gifts for people with local grains, whether it be a pie crust or breads or holiday treats. Go local. You can do it. And I sell it through Barrio Grains and at Hayden Flour Mills too.
And when we're talking about local and holidays coming up, how long will this bread last? Because I know that's one of the big things with commercial bread is a lot of preservatives are in it. And you can always tell the difference or when something's bread-wise, at least for us, like if within 3 days, if there's like little fungus growing on it, be like, okay, that's probably natural. This one over here, it's been sitting there for a month and it looks like it's still brand new. How long will this grain last?
You know what the magic is? It's a sourdough as a preservative. So this bread, my breads will last 7 days easy on the counter. And we're in Arizona, so put it in a plastic bag, preserve some of the moisture, but 3 months in the freezer, 3 or 4 months. It stores so well because no added sugars or oil, so no off taste coming out of the freezer. But this bread should never get green mold on it. The lactobacillus that's inside the dominant bacteria will outcompete any adverse mold. It might get a little bit hard, but you can toast it and it comes back. And come on, I've had a two-week-old loaf of bread in my car that I forgot and it fell out of a bag when I delivered.
Oops.
Take it. I love dry bread, stale bread. Just cut off a piece and not bad. I'll still have a little bit of moisture. But the sourdough is a preservative. And think about ancient history of bread making. This is what was needed to preserve food. Something that, and that was probably out of coincidence, found this out. But sourdough is the magic behind the preservation and the nutrition of the bread.
Final segment with Don Guerrero, Barrio Bread, and Farmer Greg right after this. In the Urban Farm Hour, final segment here, Farmer Greg joining us online, and in studio, Don Guerrero of Barrio Bread. And I will tell you, I have been on the go the last week. In fact, I was doing the math here during the break. It's been 22 hours since I ate last.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just, I'll eat at the next stop. And I just never stopped. And walking in here and having this, and it just makes me think, I love bread. And you hear so many people saying, oh, bread's bad. I'm like, bread's like the oldest known thing we humans eat. It can't suddenly be bad in the last decade. Like you said earlier, we've messed it, the process up.
It's true. Sourdough bread making is the way to go. And during COVID, we saw just a spike in everyone trying to make sourdough bread, people creating YouTube videos, everyone's at home making the bread, and it's, I think, gained in popularity. But to think about how ancient this process is and why it was made and how many people it nourished, and how when you take a simple process and keep it simple, you have great benefits from it. So learning from the past, I think we've just changed so much with Industrial Revolution, with the mono ag of hard red wheat that's dominated the North American landscape, and just going with the one grain and making a bread dough and making as fast as you can. When you speed up the process, you lose a lot of the nutritive value of the product. You lose a lot of flavor. You lose a lot of texture. And now it's just about going back to doing it in a slow way, slow food.
If I understand right, sourdough, it is gluten-free, correct?
You can say maybe not totally gluten-free is the term, but reduce gluten. When you use the sourdough as a leavener, it creates the enzymes that break down starches and proteins. So it denatures that protein strand, and at the end, you're left with a virtually gluten-free food. Very low inflammatory, especially when you use the older varietal grains like the einkorn, which dates 9,000 years ago.
Wow.
People growing and harvesting this grain for food consumption. And this just blows my mind that now I'm able to use this grain and make bread, and beautiful bread. I figured that grain out. Some of the ancient wheats are difficult to work with because they don't hold water the same. They don't have the same protein or gluten structure. But when you learn how to work with them, you can make some incredibly beautiful, tasty bread. And it's changed people's diets. It really has. People that say, I'm gluten-free, I really haven't touched bread in a decade. I have these einkorn fanatics at the bakery every Tuesday, Thursday when I make it in Tucson, and they're the first in line, and it's the first that sells out. But they tell me how it's just changed their whole nutrition, changed their diets, and they need to have it. It's not, oh, I want to have it as just a bonus life, a little extra treat. But this is one of the mainstays of their diet, because bread is a healthy food when you do it right and you don't load it up with any sugars. You just let everything ferment naturally. You can unlock that potential of the seed. In these seeds, there's amazing benefits, nutritive and flavor, that you can only create with the sourdough. So if you can unlock that seed with a sour medium that drives the pH down, you unlock that magic and all that good stuff in the seed, and the expression is something that's going to treat your body well.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for doing that. This is amazing work you're doing in the local food economy and the local grain economy. So how do people interact with you? How do we get your bread? Where do we find you?
Online, I think a good source of information is right to my website. Just launched a new website last Sunday at midnight. It's live and going. And of course, wow. When you roll out the new website, there's always these little bits and pieces you find and say, oh, no, I better get to that. But I'm proud of it. I worked with a great team in Massachusetts to get it underway. But it's looking sharp, and BarrioBread.com, the website. A lot of great information. Also on Instagram, Barrio Bread, at Barrio Bread, or at Barrio Baker. That's a little bit more of my personal, but I love – life is – it's about harmony for me. It's not a separation or equal parts family and business. It's – I say a harmony. But you could see that a little bit of my life there at Barrio Baker or at Barrio Bread Instagram. And that's probably some great resources. Also, if you want to learn more about my bread-making process, visit breadlessons.com, just plain and simple. I'm so amazed I was able to get that domain, but because it's right on point. But breadlessons.com, go there. There's a couple free videos for pizza making, some other short videos. But buy that sourdough course, 50 minutes, only $30. Once you own it, you can fast forward, reverse, print PDFs off of it. Catch me at the bakery. You could buy some of the flour, soon to be shipping. But you learn a lot. I've been a bread maker 31 years and an educator, and now I say bread educator, and just keeping it right to the core of what you need to know and taking all that crazy YouTube, listening to too many people, difficult moments out of it. I'll tell you what to do. Straightforward. It shouldn't be difficult. You'll need some practice, of course. It's craft, but I'll teach you what a pro knows.
I think you set a new standard this Saturday, Greg, with your guest. The bar has been risen. And
right?
We look forward to seeing how we rise to that bar next month. In November, we'll be talking desert winter gardening. But that wraps it up for us for today. Don Gura, Barrio Bread, thank you for spending your Saturday morning with us with Farmer Greg.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.